Welcome to The Pin Down, a Detroit Pistons podcast. I am your host, Wes Davenport from Motor City Hoops and Detroit Bad Boys. And as always, I am joined by my stellar co-host, DBB's draft expert, Blake Silverman. Blake, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you. Yeah, we're recording here on Thanksgiving Eve. We have a few days off from Pistons basketball, which I think is much needed for the team, for the fan base, for us. So yeah, I'm feeling good and happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, so all right, here's where I want to start before we get into the fun with the Pistons, just because, you know, if you're listening on podcast, it's Thanksgiving Day. Obviously, like you said, we're recording Thanksgiving. I want to know, Blake, when it's Thanksgiving Day and you're getting out, you know, the meal's all spread out for you, it looks great, everything looks awesome, you go up with your empty plate, what is the first thing you're grabbing? What's like the thing that you need to go get first?
That's
what
I think it's got to be stuffing, just because it's like you only really get it on Thanksgiving. Big stuffing guy. So I think that's where my eyes are, whether it's first going up for the meal or if I'm going up for seconds, have my eyes on the stuffing. How about you?
Well, all right. Mine might be unpopular, but I feel like as a friend, I have to let you know that you can just go like, purchase stuffing packets anytime you
can,
want.
But it right? Just like doesn't like feel bucks. Right.
It's a grocery store. It just doesn't. Okay. I respect that. For me, it's the turkey, man. I go for the turkey first. One, if you cook that bird right, that is like my favorite meat. I will take that over a good steak any day if it's cooked right. And then two, would you get the turkey on the plate first? You know, you get the little cranberry sauce on it. You get all the other sides. So you get the gravy, some potatoes. Everything kind of like touches and meshes together a little bit. And the turkey just absorbs all that delicious flavor. And it's just so good. I love my Thanksgiving turkey. No one mess with my Thanksgiving.
Man, I respect that because I feel like a lot of people are always going with the turkey is overrated take on Thanksgiving. So I respect that.
No, turkey is underrated on Thanksgiving. You guys, you're all wrong. You're all wrong. I can guarantee you. If you cook it right, it's like it's moist. It's got a lot of flavor. It doesn't even need the cranberry sauce. That's just a bonus to me. Like I will, my wife, Jill, she's a great cook. I will every now and then just throughout the year, just ask like, go get the little mini butterball, like turkey breast. And do some mashed potatoes and gravy and just have a mini Thanksgiving just in the middle of summer because I love the turkey that much. That's how committed I am, Blake, to the turkey.
That is great. Got to celebrate like a half Thanksgiving. And yeah, shout out to your wife for doing that. She's a real one.
I know. I'll kick my coverage on that one. But all right, enough fun stuff, I guess. I mean, I hope we're going to get to talk about some fun Pistons stuff, but man, look, they've lost, is it 12 games in a row now, if I'm not mistaken? 12 games in a row. The most recent one, kind of the most back-breaking, you know, I might say, right? You know, you lose to Cleveland. Cleveland's a really good team. They were mostly healthy for that game. They just kind of got outclassed, out-talented. That's fine. Coming in against the Raptors, that was kind of a shell-shacking, right? You know, blowout from the start. Started bad, only got worse. But the Nuggets, I mean, no Jamal Murray. Jokic gets tossed. Malone gets tossed. And you still end up losing to be fair, a pretty veteran team who's been there and done that before. But, you know, just with how everything is sitting right now, going into this nice little few-day break for the team, where is your mindset on, especially this most recent loss to the Nuggets? Just how have you been feeling? What are you seeing? Good and the bad?
Yeah, like, I mean, I already brought this up, but we've talked about this before, too. I think this team just needs a break. Like, they have played more games than a lot of teams. They've had back-to-backs. I mean, it feels like they've been playing at least one game every other day for the rest of the season. That Nuggets loss was definitely a heartbreaker. I hate to say this, but it almost, like, I had the thought in the back of my mind that they could blow it or just not pull it out after Giannis also got ejected and they blew that game. And especially coming after the Raptors game, like the Pistons have been in like most, if not all, of their games other than that ugly loss to the Raptors. So coming straight off of that Raptors game, at least seeing like a level of competition, them staying in it, being in it, and unfortunately it was just same old at the end, not being able to buy a bucket, turn the ball over. I mean, it's inexcusable no matter what the injuries are, what the team is going through, how bad they may be. But at least it was a fun game. At least they were in it, which I think I'm definitely downplaying it, but it was at least nice to see the competition level be back to where it should be.
Well, I mean, Blake, like, they weren't just in it, right? They were up five with, I think, 7 or 8 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. Like, they more or less had control of the game up until that point. They had been playing really well. And I guess, you know, just to quickly look at a positive side of this, you know, why don't we talk a little bit about Jaden Ivey and Cade Cunningham, a pairing we honestly haven't gotten to see too much so far this season, but that did get quite a bit of run against the Nuggets. And honestly, I thought it went pretty well. What was your review on that that duo finally getting some time?
Yeah, I thought Ivy looked really good. Of course, there are still like the things on the defensive end, which we're all aware of, which is probably why he hasn't gotten the minutes that we all think he should. But, you know, the team is just at the point where they need to try new things. And I think not pairing Ivy with Cade, especially after they barely have had any time together throughout both of their young careers, like not doing that would be a disservice. So, I mean, I'm hoping that we see Ivy continue in the starting lineup. I know when some guys get back from injury, that might change things. We might try some other things, but at least, like you said, if you're going to take any positive out of the Nuggets loss, I think it was the performance of Ivy, especially paired with Cade. Where are you at on the whole situation?
No, you know, I thought they looked really well together. I thought they played off each other especially well. There were a few times where Jaden Ivey, one thing Jaden Ivey's been doing all season at a very high level is not just getting to the rim, but finishing when he gets there too. I believe within 3 feet, he's at about 79, 80%, just field goal percentage straight up from that range. So when he gets to the rim, he's making a lot of shots. That is a huge, huge improvement from what he did his rookie year, right? So when Jaden Ivey's out there, they're able to run some of the same actions they've been putting in Killian's hands, but to a guy that's a major threat when he starts to get downhill. And there were at least three times that I can think of in that Nuggets game where Jaden Ivey drove hard, collapsed the defense, and kicked it out to someone, potentially Cade, but the ball eventually gets to Cade. And it's either an open shot or a really slanted floor, kind of allowing him to attack and do, you know, as much as he wanted, right? Kind of play at his pace. All these things that we attribute to Cade as being strengths, right? He was able to do it more easily. So I think that those two playing off each other was a really, really major high point from that game, win or lose. But here's the question I want to ask you, because I've been thinking about this a little bit with Jaden Ivey. Do you think that you and I, you know, we as a fan base are just over-focusing on Jaden Ivey's defense a little bit? You know, this is obviously something that Monty Williams has brought up, and, you know, he needs to improve his defense. He needs to get better at these things. But I'm not sure that other than Asar Thompson, we really analyze and break down anyone else's defense to this extent on the roster. You know, I mean, even a guy like Killian Hayes, who is a very good defender, if you really watch him closely, he's getting beat on backdoor cuts. He's getting beat in isolation situations. All of these little things that we point to Jaden Ivey and we say he needs to clean that up. I'm only saying this because, you know, I'm not trying to paint Jaden Ivey as some really big major plus defender on the level of a guy like Killian Hayes. Killian Hayes is a much better defender. But what I'm saying is, are we all just focusing a little too much on a guy who, you know, at the end of the day, you're probably hoping gets to average to slightly above on that end. That's never going to be his major selling point. Do you know what I
definitely,
mean?
Definitely. It definitely feels like Ivy has a bit shorter of a leash than a lot, if not anyone else on the team. I mean, we saw in the Toronto game, like Asar Thompson was turning the ball over, making some mistakes, and he sat pretty much the entire second half. So I'm hoping that we see like similar tough love, I guess, if you can call it, with some other guys that aren't named Jaden Ivey, because it seems like he definitely receives the brunt of it. But I think if we've learned anything so far in this young season, it's really that Cade needs scoring around him. Like, I mean, any top option needs a secondary scorer, and we haven't really had that in terms of a spacer or just someone who can get a bucket. I think like Ivy played great, and like you said, the drives and making kickouts or drawing fouls, he definitely can like generate offense. And I think the team definitely has been focusing on being plus defenders, but like we haven't really seen that like from Killian Hayes. Like you mentioned, he's a good defender, but does it outweigh the negatives on the offensive side? And I think really what we have to do is just figure out the right pieces to put around Cade, because the guy needs some help. And I think right now Jaden Ivey might be the guy that can provide the most help surrounding him.
I agree. You know, and I think looking back, right, reflecting a little bit on the offseason, a lot of the moves that they could have made, or at least fans would argue they maybe should have made, but then decided not to make. You know, I think a lot of this, or at least my comfort with it, was really based on this idea that, okay, you know, Cade's your primary option. You're going to be running everything through him. But then you've got this guy, Jaden Ivey, who can really get to the rim. It looks like he can shoot pretty well off the catch. He can be your next level scorer, right? Like you really need at least three guys getting over like 16 points per game to really be a competitive team in this league. Well, right now the team has one. It's Cade Cunningham, and he's not doing it efficiently. And you could say, oh, well, he needs to pick up that efficiency. But if he's the only threat to score over 20 points, then like, yeah, it's going to be a lot harder for him. So, you know, obviously we've been missing Bojan too. And he's a guy that could pretty easily get you 20. But I think, you know, this I'm really hopeful that this is kind of the moment for Jaden Ivey, where he goes through those early season turmoils. He's got to build trust with this new coach. It's a new system. He's getting ramped up. All this stuff. He got sick. You know, there was a lot working against Jaden Ivey. Now he's had the opportunity, right? He's started two games in a row. The second game, even after Killian Hayes was healthy, I'm sure he was on a minutes restriction. He didn't look healthy. He was wearing the shoulder brace, I believe it was. So, you know, obviously not 100% Killian Hayes, but Ivy still started over him. And he played really well. I found myself wishing that he shot the ball more than he did, right? There were a couple that I think he turned down, catch-and-shoot threes, where he could have let it fly but decided not to. Point is, I think that these are your two core guards, right? Like, coming into the season, the success was going to be off the scoring of Cade Cunningham and Jaden Ivey together in tandem. And it's been one of the major disappointments for me so far this year that we really haven't gotten to see those two even work out the kinks a little bit, right? Like, figure out what works and what doesn't. We haven't hardly been able to see any minutes with those two on the floor together at the same time. So, yeah, you know, I'm with you. I really think it's hopefully a time for a change, and hopefully that change is going to be really featuring Jaden Ivey, you know, moving forward, regardless of what happens with the rest of the starting lineup. That's just, he's the only guy right now on this team that can actually create an advantage for Cade Cunningham to attack. Am I crazy for thinking that? Do you think maybe Alec Burks is capable of doing it?
I mean, I think Burks definitely does provide some positives alongside Cade, like on top of the shooting, being like probably the best foul drawer on the team and getting to the line. But I don't know. I think there was a concern when we drafted Ivy, like, could him and Cade work out together? And at Purdue, like, he played off the ball. Like, I don't think he's a true point guard by any means. So I think it would just be doing this team a disservice to not even give Cade and Ivy as your backcourt, like, enough run to figure out if it works out. And a lot of other, like, I know Bryce and Omari were talking about this on the Pistons Pulse. Like, a big thing of this year is just figuring out if Cade Cunningham is the guy, if he can be a top option on a playoff team. Like, if you're not surrounding him with the proper pieces, like, he probably can't get to, or we can't even learn that this year. And like you said, I think Ivy just might be that secondary scorer that we need around him, and really just need to give some more run to see what it can turn into.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I think it goes even a little bit further than to just say this season you need to figure out Kate, because this is year four for Troy Weaver, okay? Like, this is the year where you need to figure out what you got and find a path forward, because you can't have five seasons of 20 to 30 win basketball teams, all right? So there's going to need to be a step. And if you get out of this season and you don't know if Cade Cunningham's a dude, you don't know if Jaden Ivey plays well next to him, if he is or isn't, right? So you don't know what you have in those two. You think Asar Thompson's a very good defender. He's shown to be a very good defender. He's got to figure out what he can do on offense still. You need to know, like, is Isaiah Livers a rotation-level player? Is Jalen Duren a really good defensive center, right? Or was that just a flash in the pan through the first four or five games? The only young guy on this roster that you could point to and say, I know for certain what that guy can do for a winning team, is Isaiah Stewart. And that's as a third big off the bench that's high energy, great switchable defender, can play either big spot, the four or the five. And guess what he's not doing for the Pistons right now? Not only is he starting, so he's not coming off the bench, but he's only playing the floor, the four, up until now, right? Now, because of injuries, he's been shifted up to the five. But earlier in the season, he's exclusively playing the four. So what I'm saying is there is so much on the table that you could lose out to this season by not at least setting things up for these guys to succeed next to each other. Because you know what? If you figure out that Jalen Duren is really, really good, it doesn't matter too much if everyone else is trash. All right? None of these guys are LeBron James. So no one can save this thing in a vacuum. But you got to figure out which ones are keepers and which ones are the guys you package to move on and get a guy like a Zach LaVine or some other star that's coming up on 30, wants to win, and can play that Al Horford role for the Celtics, right? When the Celtics got Al Horford the first time, he was much younger. He was still a legit star player. I think he was coming off a couple of all-star seasons. And as time goes on, he transitions into the kind of mentor role, cedes the star spot to Jason Tatum over the years. Like, that's what they're going to need to find here. And it's not going to matter unless you know everything about these young guys. And I know it's not really fair to ask that for, like, Sasser and Asar Thompson because they are rookies, but time and place, man. Like, that's what it is right now. You're going to need to take a step forward.
Yep. And that's similar to, like, what I've been thinking is, I mean, it's crazy that already at this point in the season, we're sort of talking about trades and what we should do and everything. And that's what, no matter what the trade is, I mean, if we're trading a veteran and a salary dump for draft assets, that's one thing. But if we're making maybe not a big splash, but a semi splash and trading one of our young assets, like at this point, and maybe even like leading up to the trade deadline or next offseason, I would be very nervous to trade any of our young pieces, whether it's Ivy or whoever it is, just because I feel that we don't know. We, of course, don't know what their like maximum potential is, but I feel like we don't even know what role they can play on our team moving forward. So that's why those conversations are still scary to me. And like you said, we still have a lot of learning to do.
Well, yeah, and I think you bring up a good point with the trade deadline stuff too, because, you know, ideally by the time you hit February, you know if Cade Cunningham's a stud or not. Like, that's still up in the air. I think it's pretty, we can all be very, very confident that he's a very good player, but you want to know if he's a stud, right? If he's a guy that you can build this whole thing around. And if you know that by February, I mean, you've got a lot of capital on this team to make a really impactful move, right? You've got a lot of expiring contracts. You've got big expiring contracts. Like last year with the Utah Jazz getting John Collins for peanuts, right? Hardly anything. You're in a position to do that this season at the trade deadline if you know what you have on this roster. And if you don't know what you have, then you can't. It doesn't make sense to do it, because you're going to just put someone in front of another guy you got to figure out still. I get the focus on defense. You know, I want to see good defense, but they've not been a good defensive team, even when they're focusing on defense. And all this defense is coming at the expense of figuring out what the heck we even have in a Cade Cunningham, a Jaden Ivey, or a Jalen Duren. Like, I'm just going to sound crazy, but like, what is the freaking point if that's how we're going to do this?
Yeah. You know? And I think that's where all the conversations go of like, is keeping Killian Hayes in the starting lineup, like, does what he is on the offensive side, like, is that outweighing maybe some of the positives he brings on the defensive end? And I understood the focus on defense as well to start the season. But like you said, we're not a good defensive team either. We need scoring. We've talked about it over and over again. Like, the best shooter in the starting lineup that has played for most of our games besides Cade Cunningham, and Cade hasn't even shot the ball well, was Isaiah Stewart. And it, like, whatever positives there were on the defensive side, like we've been saying, there haven't been a ton. Like, we just need to find secondary and tertiary scoring. So I really think we need to focus on that, no matter how much we wanted to focus on the defensive side, which we need to figure out. But we have to have some guys that can shoot and know how to get a bucket on the floor at all times.
Before we jump into the questions, I'm just going to drop this in and then we're going to move on. But there was a solid stretch of games, 4 or 5, where the starting lineup effectively had 0 shooters because Cade was cold and Isaiah Stewart does not get guarded like a shooter. He doesn't. He turns down too many threes right now. He needs to let more rip until they start guarding him like he can shoot 40%, which he is. So effectively, 0 shooters in an NBA starting five for a good 4 or 5 games. Moving on to some questions. Let's dive right in, Plank. Let's dive right in. I can feel it. This is going to be a great episode already. All right. This is from Cough33. He's asking, was Monty the right hire with Cade? And if Cade was drafted in large part because he makes everyone around him better, how bad are these guys without him?
Wow. That's a hard hitter right out of the gate. First of all, like, I have always been a Monty Williams fan. And so, I mean, I was thrilled when we hired him. I understand some of the discussions now. I think there is an element, and this might have even been a little bit of a concern when we hired him, is, was he actually considering just like, not coaching for a year or two or whatever his plan was, and now he's in this situation that we have a lot of work in front of us. I personally think that Monty was the right hire. I was excited by some of the other names that were in the ring, some guys who have shown that they can develop players, but I just think like what Monty did in Phoenix, that said, like, there were veterans brought in, the right guys brought in to make turn that team into what they were. But I just think, especially seeing what Monty did progressively from his first year in Phoenix to that bubble run to making the finals next year, and every how he developed like all their younger players, I think it was the right hire. And for the second part of the question on Cade being drafted because he makes everyone around him better, like there might be an element of it, as we're like the roster might not be constructed into what would best suit Cade Cunningham's game. I'm hoping this season, like I wasn't expecting this team to make the playoffs. I definitely hope that or expected them to be better. So I'm hoping if that is the case, if we do show some signs of improvement after this awful start, then maybe we can go and strategically put more guys who complement Cade's game around him. Because I think if we learned anything, Cade needs scorers around him. He needs guys who are going to make his life easier on both ends of the floor. How we balance that is another issue. But I don't know. Like, yeah, some of the guys on the roster haven't looked great. And like we've been talking about with the starting lineup, like we have no spacing around him, no shooting. But hopefully, whether it's via trade, via free agency or the draft next offseason, we can put some better guys that complement his game around him.
Yeah. So to the second part of this question, right? QT and YouTube user hit it, I think, in the chat. We know how bad these guys are without Cade Cunningham. They're a 17-win basketball team without Cade Cunningham, even with all the injuries. That's what they were last year. This isn't that much different of a team. So I think that one's a pretty easy one to hit on. But for Monty being the right hire for Cade, I lean to being with you, right? I think on paper, everything looks really good. I think the offensive style, right, that Monty Williams in the past has run really does favor a lot of what Cade likes to do. But, you know, I do think it is a little too early to make a judgment either way, right? I mean, obviously I'm frustrated about some of these lineup decisions, about how some of these games have gone, the focus on defense, the laundry list of things, right? But at the end of the day, we're 14 games into a season with a very experienced and proven head coach and an exceptionally young basketball team. Like almost everyone on this roster right now that's playing minutes outside of Alec Burks might be under 25. It is a ridiculously young team. So it's too early for anything that Monty Williams might be teaching to really click with these guys. You know, like, this stuff takes time. It takes time for the offensive system to get put in. It takes time for some of the defensive principles to get put in. And, you know, we've seen plenty of defensive miscommunications on just trading off switches, backdoor cuts, all this kind of thing. So I just, with Monty Williams, I think it's probably just a little bit too early to make a call on. Talk to me by the end of the season. I think we're going to know. You know, once you get after the All-Star break, if things aren't turned around or at least pointing in a positive direction, I think then you might be able to say some more about, did they make a mistake, you know?
Yeah, and also just to, like, we might not even know this season. I always fall back to just comparing, I guess, the trajectory with Monty Williams to what he did in Phoenix, but they weren't good his first year as a coach there. Like, they didn't really show, I guess, a sense of promise until his second year. So we might not know that. Like, and at this point in the season, it's looking like we might not. Like, hopefully we do see some sense of progression, but maybe it doesn't come until year two, which I think is an unfortunate answer, but it might be the case.
All right, moving on to our next question here from our guy, YouTube user, the anonymous man. We love him. He's always in the chats. YouTube user, happy Thanksgiving, man. Appreciate you always. So he's asking, would you guys trade Jaden Ivey for Zach LaVine straight up? Like if the cap worked, if the picks worked, nothing else. One for one. What okay. do you think?
Yeah, well, I was going to say, like, I don't think that trade would work cap-wise, but if we're going just based on that, right now it's tough because, like, I really am afraid to trade Ivy in any deal right now because we haven't seen him run a ton with Cade Cunningham. Like, we saw a huge role change after a promising rookie season. I'm leaning towards yes right now, by a very slim margin, just because I think, like, Zach LaVine, like, I mean, an all-star caliber scorer like him doesn't come around a lot. He's proven, he's on the younger side, he has a few years left on his deal. We could stomach his contract better than other teams could. So I don't know. This is a very tough question. I think I lean towards the yes side, knowing I'm taking a huge risk that might come back to bite me by giving up Ivy this early into his career.
Yeah, I agree. I also lean towards yes. I think in a vacuum, and obviously this is not a trade that could ever, you know, feasibly happen. The cap structure just doesn't work. In a vacuum, I do think that Zach LaVine is a good enough player and a young enough player to make this worth it. Zach LaVine is a fantastic shooter. He's a fantastic scorer. He's a good enough secondary ball handler, and he's a tremendous athlete, even at 29 years old. All of these things he provides at an all-star, borderline all-NBA level, and all of those things are major issues on this Pistons roster right now. So, you know, you look for, I was talking a little bit about the Al Horford type of star for this team a little bit earlier. Zach LaVine is a decent candidate to be that type of guy. You know, he's at the point of his career where he's going to want to win. If he can embrace more of a leadership role in this locker room along with Cade Cunningham, you know, he immediately elevates the floor of this team. He immediately makes Cade Cunningham's life a lot easier. And because of how good he is as a shooter, he is a little bit more of a natural fit. Now, at the same time, everything that you just said about Jaden Ivey, it rightfully gives us some pause. He's got incredible potential. He could be a really, really great player. He's a great scorer in his own right and developing pretty well up until this point. I think the thing is, I look at Jaden Ivey and I don't think I ever saw a player that can score, pass, and rebound at the level that Zach LaVine can. So while what Jaden Ivey is going to give you, he's going to give it to you longer, right? Because he is younger. But that high-end outcome from Zach LaVine, like, he's only 2 years removed from, I think, a 27-5-5, where he was almost in the 50-40-90 club. Like, yeah, that would be pretty game-changing for this roster. So I think it's close. I lean to yes. I could be persuaded either way.
Yeah, me too. And Mr. Jones in the chat brings up a good point. Like, being in Detroit probably isn't Zach LaVine's ideal situation at this point in his career. He probably wants to go to a contender. If he sees promise in this team, like, maybe he could buy in. But I think that's another thing too that we worry about. Someone else brought up his health concerns. Like, that's a real thing too. I just think with, like, Ivy is our big trade chip. And I mean, there are some other guys, but who of those are we going to be willing to part with? So yeah, I mean, I'd be very concerned to trade Jaden Ivey, but maybe him or someone similar is a piece that you'd have to give up if we are trying to make a big splash in the trade market at some point.
Yeah, well, you definitely would. You definitely have to give up, if not Ivy, you know, a Darren, a Stewart, potentially an Asar, though I highly doubt they would want to do that at this point. So, you know, these are the conversations that would be really, really valuable to have at the trade deadline if we knew more about this roster. So I'll just say this, with regard to Zach LaVine, maybe buying in or not buying in, I think I can make a pretty strong argument that this Detroit Pistons roster, when healthy, is a far better fit, just talents and skill-wise, for Zach LaVine than is the current Bulls roster. I'm not saying there's more talent. I think he might be in a much better spot with these guys than with those guys. So moving on to friend of the show, KCP43, and it's through from the DBB comments, always active there. He's asking, what do we do about Cade if he's not a number one option? And this is obviously referencing a recent piece from The Ringer, which breaks down a lot of Cade's shortcomings in the efficiency stats.
First of all, love that username. And I mean, this is like a real tough question. Like, if the Pistons realize that Cade isn't like the true top guy that can put them into contention, like, what is he? Does he fit in this team? Does he go somewhere else? So I don't know. Like, if he's not a number one option and he stays in Detroit, then I guess, like, who is going to be the number one option? Is it someone we bring in via trade, via the draft? Like, I think that's the real unknown, because if he's not going to get us there to play in conversations, the playoff conversations, then who is it going to be? I think right now it's not someone that's on this roster. So there's a ton of unknown with this question. I still, while like the piece that was written in The Ringer had a bunch of good stats, a bunch of good data, like I think there still is a lot with Cade that is not spoken for, is unknown. Like we saw most recently in the Denver game, like his true shooting percentage was up above 60%, and that was because he got to the line a lot. So the inefficiency, I think, can improve with just some decision-making things, maybe getting a few more whistles. And then at that point, I think we might be able to learn a little bit more about what he truly is. But I think at the end of the day, if he's not the number one option in Detroit, who is it going to be? And is Cade, would Cade even still be on the roster at that point? This is a tough one that we have like so much more to figure out. Where are you at with this whole conversation?
Well, I think you're totally right in saying that we still don't know. And I mean, listen, like with the Ringer piece, I love the Ringer. They do great work with this particular article that they put together. Like I had quite a few issues with it. I can poke holes in the stats that they've used. I can poke holes in that for 45 minutes. So I'm not going to do that. What I'd really like to focus on, and I think the biggest problem with it, is something that you just touched on, right? It's the unknown and some of the context. So in the piece, they wave off all of the context that Cade has been, you know, forced to live and play within over his effectively one full season of NBA basketball. And you just can't do that. Stats taken out of their context are useless, okay? So you can't just wave a magic wand and say, well, all number one picks go to bad teams, so Cade should be better than this. We talked about it earlier, right? There have been games this season where he's not played with a single shooter out on the floor with him. Not a single one. Like, nothing over the course of these really 3 years, but 2 years of NBA basketball have been set up for him to succeed. And you can make an argument that he needed to step above that. Sure, maybe. I'm not so sure about that, though, because even though he's a number one pick, you know that he's not a super athlete. And I know I wasn't expecting him to be a 30 points per game guy when he got into the league. This was always kind of the deal with him. It was a, the comparison was Luka Doncic if you turn the scoring down a notch. I don't think, at least I never thought, that this was going to be, the next LeBron James type player on offense where he's going to score 30 a game, give you 10 assists and 10 rebounds. Like, this was at a top end, like a 25, 5-7 type guy. All right. And that's still a really valuable player. So I think you can even track back now to the Jaden Ivey draft. A lot of the plus that people were talking about with Jaden Ivey was that he can be that number one scoring option, because not a lot of people expect Cade Cunningham to be 30 points per game a night. We were hoping that was going to be Jaden Ivey. So directly to the Ringer piece, if Cade Cunningham isn't a number one scoring option, that doesn't change anything to me. I don't think that was really ever in the cards. I think what's in the cards and what's still in question is, can he be the best player on a Eastern Conference Finals, on a championship level roster? And that is very much in the air. I think he's got it in him, right? And he's shown flashes, but he's not done it yet. And the efficiency numbers are concerning, and he needs to get to the line more. I'm not saying there aren't any holes in his game. I'm just saying we still don't know so much, just like you pointed out. And at the end of the day, like, we've been talking about this all episode. We got to figure it out at some point. So we've got to take away all of the excuses. We need to put them out there with shooters, man. We need to spread the floor. We need to give them a lob threat. We need to set everything up so that Cade Cunningham can succeed, so that I can't sit here and go, oh, X, Y, Z, right? There needs to be no excuses left. And if he can't do it, then all right, we got to reevaluate. Maybe he's Chris Paul instead of a lesser Luka Doncic, right? Maybe he's Paul Pierce. Maybe he's Jason Tatum. I don't know. We just don't know yet. We got to figure it out. So I'm not too worried about that piece. I think it came too early. And again, like, how many of us really thought that he was going to score 30 points per game one day? Like, honestly, was that your evaluation of him in that draft? 30 points a night?
No, I mean, while he has the potential to like pop for that, I didn't think he would be like a 30 point per game, like, average guy. I mean, a huge part of his game is like playmaking as well. And with like the whole article was centered around like advanced stats. And I know, like, I mean, national media is watching the Pistons too. I think us and like the rest of the fan base, we've seen Cade like start cooking and I guess just like making shots, and everything he puts up is going down. So we've seen that. I think the efficiency and the turnover is like, are definitely a concern. I think a lot of the efficiency issues has been the attention he garners from opposing defenses. It wasn't just this year. It was in his rookie year as well. And that's going to be solved by putting scorers beside him. It probably won't be fully solved. He'll probably get doubled on a lot of nights, but if we have other guys that can allow him to work in space, then maybe that efficiency and his like assist to turnover ratio and everything like that will improve over time. Like, I think at this point where we are now in the season, we need to see small improvements game over game and compare those to where he was when we were going through this losing streak, which who knows when it's going to be snapped. But I think us all that are like watching the Pistons on a nightly basis, we've seen what Cade can do. And I don't think it's right to, I guess, just fully write him off as a number one option in the NBA at this point in his career.
Yeah, I would agree with you, even though I'm not expecting him to be like that literal number one scoring option. I do still expect him to eventually be the best player. And we're seeing a couple of these come through in the chat now, player comparisons, like Magic Light. I think that's definitely still in the cards. Paul George, definitely still in the cards. Like a lot of the comparisons and the ceiling levels that were all talked about Cade on his draft night, I think everything's still in the cards at this point. So, you know, like you said, it's kind of a wait and see. All right, on to our next one. This is from our guy, again, YouTube user. Can the Pistons be 500 in the second half of the season? If so, how?
It's just hard for me to see a point right now where this team can win every other game. Like, I'm hoping the turnovers and I guess just like the offensive firepower can be cleaned up when we're learning from these mistakes, hopefully, and also getting some guys back from injury. It being like a 500 team in this league is hard. I think we've all realized that we're not like a good team in this league yet. Hopefully we get to that point. But I'm at least hoping once we get some guys back, once we clean things up, focus on the right things, figure out how to close games out down the stretch, we can at least win more. But I think 500 is just like a hard path to get to for this team.
Yeah. You know, I'm with you. It's a lot to ask. I do think it's a lot to ask. At the same time, you know, I don't think it's really fair to look at this roster and look at the type of play they've been putting out and totally discount what Monte Morris, who's now unfortunately going to be missing another 6 to 8 weeks, but also Bojan Bogdanović bring, right? You look at the big time bugaboos for this team. It's turnovers. It's 3-point shooting, right? I mean, for all of the focus on defense, like they've been average to slightly below average on the defensive end. Okay, you know, that's a step up. Great. The issues are turnovers and shooting. So you look at a guy like Monte Morris, what does he do really well? Well, he never turns the ball over and he can shoot the leather off the ball. Look at a guy like Bojan Bogdanović, what does he do really well? Well, he shoots, he scores, and he's a really high field player, so he doesn't turn the ball over too often. I just think you are missing key guys in this rotation that very directly address some of the major issues that we've been watching through 14 games. And, I mean, you could throw Isaiah Livers into this as well, because Isaiah Livers is the only true 3-and-D guy that this Pistons roster has. They've got a lot of guys that can do one or the other. Isaiah Livers can do both. Now, he's got to stay healthy, right? This has always been an issue in his career. But, you know, just on those three guys alone, all three projected to get a lot of minutes. I mean, you saw Isaiah Livers close the game out in Denver, his first game back from missing time, and he's out there with the closing lineup, right? Coach trusts him a lot to do that on a minutes restriction. A lot of trust there. He was going to play a lot. Bojan's obviously going to play a lot. Monte Morris would have played a lot. All of these guys, like, it sucks, but they fix a lot of the problems that we've been seeing. So they're going to come back. Monte Morris a little bit further from now than the other two. But when even, you know, Isaiah Livers is back, when Bojan comes back too, when Duren gets healthy, I mean, we're talking about Jalen Duren like he might be an all-star in the future. Well, he's missed a bunch of games over this losing streak. The health thing really sucks, because I feel like we don't know what we have with this team because so many of the issues could have been fixed if these guys just played basketball for 14 games instead of 0-6 in the case of Duren. So can they turn it around? Maybe. You know, like if these guys come back and they make a huge impact and all of a sudden things are a little calmer because you've got these veterans who can, you know, really control the pace and kind of level guys out, like, sure, you know, they can get close to it. I don't know if legitimately 500, that might be a lot, but approaching, you know, 400 basketball over the second half, sure, you know, I think it's all reachable. I just don't know if they can do it. We haven't seen these guys. We just don't know. And that's been my one big like disappointment so far this season. You go up and down this roster and it's still just major question marks. I feel like I don't know any more than I did before the year started. And that's just bad luck, man. That sucks.
Yeah, and like I'm really excited to for Bojan to come back. Like, I mean, when he was active last year, like he's one of the best scorers that this team has had in a while. We haven't seen him play a ton with Cade, like whatever those 11, 12 games were last season before Cade was out for the year due to injury. So, I mean, like you said, I think he can definitely help with a lot of things that we're currently missing. And it sounds like he can return soon. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how the lineup and just like the team in general changes just by putting him back into the rotation.
So real quick, our guy Pistons Turkey brought this up to me over Twitter DMs, you know, thinking about Orlando last year, because they also were a very young team, recent number one overall pick, right? They really turned it on in the second half of the season. I'm not sure if they got all the way to 500 basketball, but they at least got close. I mean, you know, this might be recency bias again, like you just said, but how realistic do you think Orlando fans thought a turnaround like that was before it happened? Because if you remember, I think they started off that year like 3-11, something like that. It wasn't too far off from where the Pistons are right now. They were bad to start the year. Bad.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I think it's funny because I think with Orlando, like a lot of the success they're having right now is what they're doing on the defensive side of the ball. And we've just been saying like, we need scoring behind this team. So like, but I don't know, maybe the answer is like, once we do put scorers next to Cade, just have more like bucket getters in general, that will solve some things like immediately, like slap a Band-Aid on the overarching problem of getting this team to where we want it to be. And then we can like fill in and focus more on the defensive side once we know who we can go to when we're in fourth quarters and we can't buy a bucket, and figuring those things out that way. I think Orlando surprised everyone a bit last year, but they did have like the pieces in place. I mean, I think the Vucevic trade, like we all know by now, was a steal for them. And like Wendell Carter is a great defensive player. He can score when they need him to. And then all the guys that they brought in through the draft and have grown in-house and everything. I don't think it's totally out of the realm of possibilities to say that the Pistons can go on a run like that. I think we've seen them in the past go on some late season runs that maybe were debatable if we really wanted that with the whole lottery standings and everything. But I think it's possible. I just think like 500 over a whole like second half of the season is a lot to ask for right now. And just going off of what we've seen this team is currently, I don't know if they can get there, but hopefully they can at least show signs of being able to win games and rip off a win streak at some point, maybe.
No, I'm with you. I think that is the realistic expectation, right? Baby steps. You want to see them improve. You want to see the little stuff start to go right. Last thing I'll say on this, you know, a little bit more, I guess, on the optimistic side, right? You know, you look at that Magic team last year, they had a few really good vets that were really important to that team. I mean, you look at a guy like Gary Harris, he played a critical role for them. And then you look at the early season start for this year's Rockets, right? I mean, Fred VanVleet, Dylan Brooks, these guys are veterans that make life easier for the star young players that they're hoping are going to take a step. So, you know, these Pistons, they haven't had their veterans, right? You know, maybe those guys come back and that kind of alleviates all of this pressure and things start to turn around. I mean, it's not out of the question. I'm hopeful. I hope that's how it goes. We got another Kate Cunningham question here. This is from Team Raff in the DBB comments, asking, statistically, the best lineups with Cade are those he played with Kojo or Killian. Do you think Cade is really a jumbo PG, or is he more of a shooting guard who happens to also be a pretty good facilitator?
Yeah, so this sort of relates to what we were talking about with the Ringer article. I think there was a piece in there that actually said that Cade was better when Killian is on the floor. Like, I think even maybe like a positive net rating compared to when Killian is off the floor. But I don't know. I think Cade can play as a primary ball handler. I think he can also work a lot off the ball, get to his spots, and maybe scoring opens up that way. I don't think it's fair to say like we need to put him next to a guy like Killian or Corey Joseph for him to succeed and be what it is. I think as we see more minutes of him playing alongside Jaden Ivey and what they can do together as a scoring duo, maybe we see something different. And when you look at the stats, it's not like a crazy delta between Killian on the floor and off the floor. So it's definitely like an interesting one. And I think this is one where you have to incorporate the eye test. Like, what is the rest of the team doing when those two are playing together? Because like we've been talking about, the benefit with Killian in theory is his defense. But it's just not outweighing some of the negatives on the offense right now. So I think we just need to put Cade around a scorer, at least one secondary scorer, hopefully another floor spacer. I know we've been saying that over and over again, but I think that's really what he needs to just get some help and allow him more space to work.
Yeah, absolutely. So like just on first glance, right? More ball handling and more scoring, definitely going to help out no matter who you're talking about, right? Like a guy like LeBron James benefits from a Kyrie Irving, and LeBron James is the de facto point guard. The more guys you can throw out on the court that can handle the ball, that can score, that can shoot, the better things are going to go. So that's just a blanket statement. With this one in particular, I'll poke the hole in this one. All right, I'll poke the hole in this stat. Kojo and Killian. You want to know what lineups those guys happen to be in when they're with Cade Cunningham? The starters, okay? You want to talk about the difference on and off, right? It's because they're with the starters, okay? It's the rest of the guys out on the court that are either helping to elevate or tear it down, especially with Corey Joseph, right? Because with Killian, you can make the argument now that, well, Jaden Ivey's off the bench, Alec Burks is off the bench, but they've also been playing a lot of three-guard type stuff with all of that. So I still give a little bit pass. But with Kojo, remember that roster from Cade's rookie season. Remember that Jeremy Grant was hurt quite a bit. There was not a lot of talent off the bench. And the guy that was starting next to Cade Cunningham just so happened to be Corey Joseph. So yeah, I'll pop that one. I don't love that stat, so I'll just throw that in. As for if Cade is a point guard or a shooting guard, I'm not sure that the distinction matters too much anymore. You know, to your point, right? A great fit next to Cade Cunningham is a guy that can handle the ball and a guy that can score on his own. That makes life easier for Cade, makes life easier for everyone else on the roster. Does it really matter if that's a true point guard or a true shooting guard or a true small forward or even a power forward? No, like Pascal Siakam would be a huge help for Cade Cunningham right now. And he's not even a guard. Just having someone else that can take pressure off and be an outlet in some of these like easy trapping scenarios that Cade's getting caught in right now. Like, yeah, that'd be a big help. So I'm not sure it matters all that much which one you want to slot him in. The point is, no matter where you put him, he probably should be running the offense. So I will say that, like, you do want him to be the guy getting everyone in their spots. But beyond that very small portion of the role, like, not just get more ball handlers, just get more scorers. The more the merrier. More, give me like 10 Jaden Ivies on this roster. That'd be great. I'd love it. I think that'd be a huge help.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Like, the nice thing with Cade, like we both said, is I think he can play like on the ball as a primary ball handler or off the ball. And also, like you mentioned, like the whole thing is running through him. So no matter how that happens, like, we have to figure out how to make it work, how to get the most out of him. And yeah, I don't think long-term that's going to be alongside guys like Corey Joseph or Killian Hayes.
Yeah, I agree. And really quickly here, I want to shout out our guy, Steven Hudson. He asked a very similar question about Monty Williams, if that might've been a mistake, but in this case, it was couching it in Jaden Ivey's situation that he's had this year. I don't think we're going to be able to get to it because it was so similar, but I want to give him a shout out. Let's hit this one last and then close it on out for this special Thanksgiving episode. Again, Blake, thanks for joining me with it. I really appreciate it. This is our guy, YouTube user. You're closing it out, my friend. He asks, is he crazy or should the Pistons be playing less small guard forward combos or hybrids? So like your Stanley Amude, and instead play more big forwards. So your Kevin Knox, your Isaiah Livers, even your Asar Thompson, those types of guys.
Yeah, I think this one matters a lot on the personnel. And I mean, I do have to shout Stanley Amude out. Like, really he's happy for the guy. I think he's played well in the minutes he's gotten, made the most of his opportunity. We've definitely learned he's not afraid of any moment. If he has the right shot, he's going to put it up. And a lot of times he can make it, which is good. But yeah, I mean, I think if we can add more big forwards, especially ones that can shoot, speaking to Kevin Knox, like, yeah, he shot great the few games he's been back. I don't think he can keep that up, and that's not a slight on him. I don't think really anyone can keep up shooting the ball at the rate he is. So I think if you do have some of those big forwards in, it does take a little bit of pressure, or I guess just gets us out of a mess of a situation where we've been falling back on playing two bigs, and whether that's the right thing to do. Really, I just think whoever is going to be in that wing stretch four position needs to shoot the ball at a high rate, and whoever that's going to be should play. Of course, playing guys like with the size of like Knox or a Livers is going to give you more versatility, rebounding on the offensive glass, on the defensive side of the floor. But really, for me, this sort of boils down to who is going to be the most efficient shooter and can help us score.
Yeah, I agree. I think YouTube user, I think you're spot on. The big forwards, one, guys like Livers, they help you shoot, they help you score. So that just on face value, love it. I'd like to see more of that. But I think the bigger, more physical forwards is kind of a natural successor to this too big experiment that they've been running a little bit. Because your Durin, your Stewart combo at the 4-5, obviously it's very physical, it's imposing, right? They're very strong and they're very good on the boards, especially when you're sticking an Asar Thompson next to them. But if you throw out a lineup with Isaiah Livers and with Asar Thompson at the 3-4, still next to a guy like Durin, you're not as tall, but you're almost as physical. Isaiah Livers isn't quite the rebounder that Isaiah Stewart is, but he gives a good effort. He goes on the glass, right? He tries to get boards. Asar Thompson can cover for a lot of that. He's already averaging, if not double digits, close to it in the rebound department. But what he does a lot better is guard the wing and handle the ball and shoot the ball. Like, Isaiah Livers is a really high level 3-point shot taker. He's not always been a, 40% plus shot maker. From three last year, his percentage was a little bit down. But just the fact that that's a guy you could trust to probably get up about six threes a game, that would be game changing for the starting lineup. So I'm actually at the point where I would really like to see them trot out the lineup we saw close the game against Denver. I know they blew the 5-point lead, but that had more to do with just execution out of the young guys and losing to a very veteran team that kind of had been and lived through that moment before than I think the lineup on paper in terms of a factor. So Cade Cunningham, Jaden Ivey, Ysaire Thompson, Isaiah Livers, and then Isaiah Stewart if Jalen Duren can't go. If Jalen Duren can go, stick him at the five instead of Stewart. I still think all of that is the same value. But right now, that's your best spacing. That's probably even your best defense. Like, just play the big forwards. Shift Isaiah Stewart to the five. I know Bagley's been playing well. Shift him to the five and have him play a little bit of the four. I think this is a very good solution to some of the problems they've been seeing, and I'd love to see more of it. Absolutely love to see more of it.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. And I mean, it'll be interesting to hear once Bojan is back, like what the closing lineup is, especially if Livers stays healthy and can knock down shots. Like, is he in the closing lineup for defensive purposes opposed to Bojan? We just need scoring and shooting out there right now to hopefully get us some buckets in fourth quarters so we don't go 5 minutes without a field goal or whatever it has been in some of those games that we've dropped at the end.
Yeah, and really quickly, friend of the show, our guy Jack Kelly, he threw in a bit earlier that he finally joined my team on what the starting lineup should be when these guys are all healthy. Because I had been pushing from way back early in the offseason after the draft for Cade Cunningham, Jaden Ivey, Ysaire Thompson, Bojan Bogdanović, Jalen Duren. He's on board. He wasn't with me at that point, but he is now. I want to see it. Let's go.
Hey, for the record, I think that was my ideal starting lineup too. When Ivy was moved into the bench spot, like, I thought he was going to be a high volume minutes, like six man kind of guy. And with that starting five with Ivy, Ysaire, Bojan, Duren, and Cade, like, I could see Stewart as that six man guy. I definitely want to see that one as well when healthy. Hopefully we do. TBD if that's the case, though.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it. So we got to let everyone go. If you're listening over podcast, it's probably Thanksgiving Day. So happy Thanksgiving to you guys. To everyone that tuned in here on Thanksgiving Eve live on YouTube, appreciate you all. The questions were awesome. This was a great show. Blake, wrap us up, man.
Yeah, thank you everyone for joining on the special Thanksgiving episode. We're thankful for all the listeners, everyone sending in their questions and supporting us. Wes, I hope you have a very happy Thanksgiving. We'll be back next week for another episode talking some Pistons hoops. A special thank you to our managing editor of Detroit Bad Boys, Sean Corp, for supporting the show. And again, just shout out to everyone for the great questions and talking points tonight. We'll catch you next week. Likely back on our same days, recording live on Thursday. Whether you're listening on your commute or live here with us on YouTube, we can't wait to talk more Detroit hoops with you all.